This is tape number 402. It's side two, August 17th, 1979, May Brussel in Carmel. The battle of the Civil War is still going on in this country. As I say, the weapon industry came to those areas that were not developed and not socially sophisticated and didn't have the culture. The education in Europe were kept somewhat provincial, and their educational level, their provincialism, was combined with their slave mentality, their attitude in the South towards slavery and blacks and Mexicans coming in, and this has affected our political decisions today and the way we handle people around the world. In 1860, Tsar Alexander II from Russia and the United States were close. President Lincoln had signed an alliance that saved the United States through the Civil War, and Russia was working with Abraham Lincoln and the government, and through that, Russia began to get advanced technology, which they needed. By 1862, the Nobel family began their oil development. Alfred Nobel, Ludwig Nobel, and Robert Nobel. Their father built armaments and gunpowder and heavy machinery industries, and Emanuel Nobel invented underwater mines, which eventually led to the defeat of the British in the Baltic and Crimean Sea. The Nobel oil is important. Most of the names and dates go chronologically up to my work, as I say, linked to the Kennedy assassination, because George de Morenschild, Lee Harvey Oswald's closest friend and contact in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for the CIA, was the son of Mr. von Morenschild, who managed the Nobel oil fields in Baku in Russia and before the Soviet Union was formed, so that there was a link of the de Morenschilds to the Nobel oil interests. In 1872, Robert Nobel established oil refineries in Baku. That's where de Morenschild's father was to be manager of those. And Ludwig Nobel went to Baku, and they built their pipelines. They got the idea of transporting through pipes and rail and built a complicated rail transport and storage system for handling of oil. And this is just at the time the Industrial Revolution was really to break open. The U.S. oil industry in 1876 was observed by Russia, and the Cossacks had invented the first oil tankers, and they found the sulfuric acid for refining kerosene, and they began to upgrade the labor movement slowly in the Baku oil fields at least. In 1877, at the time this was going on, Standard Oil was beginning its muscles and had gained national ascendancy in the oil market. At this same time, Cecil Rhodes is going to be putting up money to expand British rule throughout the world, and Standard Oil in the United States is opening up as against the Soviet oil for control of world oil. Before World War I and after 1871, during this process, Jews in Germany were getting some emancipation. They'd been citizens throughout the Middle Ages and through a large part of European history, and the Jewish culture became very strong in Germany from 1857 until 1919. The Jewish population in Vienna grew by more than 400%, and there were medical and legal persons. They became part of the cultural community and blended in where they'd been excluded up to that time in all societies. And at that time, then, the Pan-German movement began a counteract to them called the Volksish, V-O-L-K-I-S-C-H, that was a anti-Semitic movement that began, and then secret cults began to spring up. Anti-Semitic nationalistic cults were forming to oppose the success the Jews had in melting into the societies in Germany, particularly the medical institutions and the legal institutions and the businesses they were going into. There was a counteraction of the non-Jewish community to begin these cults that later were to incorporate Hitler. They were looking forward to what they called a Führer. In 1890, there was an American faction. There was a group here that, as I say, assisted Russia with chemicals, oil, transportation. The United States was working with them. Up to that time, Great Britain had ruled the world as the empire, and they ruled the backward populations, they manipulated them, and in 1899 there was a depression. The English had opposed the czarist expansions. They didn't want them expanding their territory. They certainly can see why. Great Britain was very tiny and had been out exploring and expanding in Asia, Southeast Asia, Africa, and Australia, and Canada, and gaining a hold for its own prosperity. And this giant Russia, this huge landmass, was developing their own oil and railroads and oil tankers, which could be a big threat to the British Empire. In 1891, Cecil Rhodes was down in South Africa, and he, at that time, had control of 90% of the world's diamond supply. So Standard Oil, by the 1890s, had a big hand in American oil with a desire to grab the world's oils. There were the rich oil fields of Baku and in the southern part of the Soviet Union, and then the supply of diamonds was controlled by Cecil Rhodes, and he went on to become an important person in making a secret society to hold the British Empire and their gains. In 1901, the Rockefellers, Standard Oil, had enough money to begin their medical institute, and they founded the Rockefeller University in New York and the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research that is the leader in DNA that sends doctors and persons down to the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, and God knows what they've come up with since 1901 when the oil people decided to get into the medical business. That's interesting because the Hughes Empire decided we'll open a medical institute later in 1956-57 in Miami, far away from Howard Hughes' home base, but these huge blocks decided they would have medical institutes. A man that was a doorman for an office building that was a medical institute in Florida with no qualifications at all became the head man. It's interesting that the oil people and the aerospace people decided early when they began to reap their profits to go into the medical business. With the escalation of cancer and diseases and pollutants in the air, you simply wonder what they did with all this money for, in quotes, medical research. I'll try not to make too many comments as I run down these dates, but I just want to bring it up to date because when an event took place back then, such as the Rockefellers starting a medical institute, and this is now 1979, it is appropriate to ask where it all went. But in 1903, Rasputin arrived in the Russian court. There are some books and literature to suggest that he was there to weaken the Soviet Union, and the stage was set for the 1905 invasion or war between Japan and Russia, at which time Russia was severely weakened and their fleet was cut off, and it was an attack against the Soviet Union, which made England and the other countries believe that the Soviet Union was weak and could be conquered. And there was this competition between the Standard Oil and later the Royal Dutch Shell, which is an important factor here with Queen Juliana and in the Netherlands. And the opinion was that Japan, by attacking the Soviet Union and knocking out the fleet, could stop some of their imperial grab, that the Empire of Great Britain wouldn't be challenged. And the belief, as I say, was that the Rasputin was there to weaken the court if he could. In 1901, the Baku fields in Russia were producing one half of the world's population. And as I say, they had the pipelines and the connections and the refinery to do it. And at that point, Russia was insecure of her boundaries and reaching out. Nicholas II was forced to grant a constitution in 1905, at the time of the confrontation with the Japanese. It wasn't a great democracy, but in a way they were going to make some changes, and Russia was in the process of restructuring itself. In 1905, Charles Bonaparte, the direct relative of Napoleon Bonaparte, who was unsuccessful at conquering Russia, came to the United States, and he founded the Federal Bureau of Investigation that would be heavily anti-Russian, anti-communist, pro-counterintelligence and working with organized crime. He was the founder of the FBI, Charles Bonaparte. He was the Secretary of Navy from 1905 to 1909, and he was the Attorney General in 1909 under Ted Roosevelt. There's a very good book out called The Russian Imperial Conspiracy, and it has to do with war plans and war booty and the work of Russia and the Tsars arranging World War I. This book dates the plans for World War I actually beginning in May in 1906, in March, meetings in Paris and then in London, and planning a harmonized attack of encircling Germany. They considered Germany a threat, and the Great Britain was cementing its meetings with the British king and the Tsar as early as June 1908 to control Germany. The rationale behind it, according to this one source and some other sources that I've read to back it up, was that the Russians wanted to have control of the Dardanelles to get access to the world market for Russian products and extend their influence in the Balkans. And West Germany and Austria had to be controlled because of their influence also in the Balkans and in Austria. And that if Great Britain and Russia would ally against Germany, they could keep them from spreading out into those very rich territories. The French would go along with it because of the Alsace-Lorraine conflicts. There was iron mines in Lorraine and coal properties in the Saar Valley, and they suffered these indignities and what they called humiliations at the time of the Franco-Prussian War in 1871, and wanted to break the growing power of Germany. This goes back that early, before World War I, to break the growing power of Germany. And Germany was building a navy, which also then would threaten the British supremacy at sea. They were threatened by it, and one way that Russia thought that they could gain some strength in the Balkans and protect the British with their navy was to combine their energy against Germany. And they pinpoint a date of France and Russia meeting with Great Britain as early as 1892 to contemplate military operations against Germany. And these meetings were in secret, of course, have written up since and documented since. But it's this kind of meeting and conniving that takes place at a certain time, and then a few years later, on the flimsiest excuse of a man being shot, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, the World War I broke out. It seems, according to history books, that there was more to that shooting, and there were a lot of heavy preparation taking place. The British Empire had a society called the Round Table Group of British aristocrats. It was secret. It was started by Lord Milner, and it was part of Cecil Rhodes' trust to protect those great diamond mines and control that he had. This was in 1908, the same year that our FBI was founded, and it was the year of the founding of the Armenian Society, which would become the prototype of the Nazi secret societies later. The Round Table conspirators were formed in the U.S., and they were tied together by Colonel House from Texas, who was living in Great Britain with Herbert Hoover before World War I. And Colonel House, of course, helped sabotage the plans of Woodrow Wilson to end peace after the end of World War I. In 1908, when this was going on, William Buckley Sr., the father of James Buckley, and William Buckley, the writer, and many other little Buckleys along the way, went to Mexico City working for Shell Oil, which was the Rothschilds' interest over in Europe, in the Rockefellers, representing Shell and Rockefeller in Mexico. He lived there from 1908 to 1924 and then went to Venezuela and controlled the Panapec Oil Company, which had oil holdings in Cuba that Fidel Castro confiscated, and also Venezuela Rockefeller oil interests down there. And, of course, the Buckley family have been involved with E. Howard Hunt and later the assassination teams very closely when we get on further. And the Mexican assassination teams were important in the John Kennedy assassination. Sirhan had contacts in Mexico, and also James Earl Ray was in Mexico. Mexico money was the biggest story to conceal at the time of Watergate. They used Gerald Ford, a member of Congress, to stop the banking committees from Wright Patman from investigating the Mexican money connections as a conduit for the assassination teams. And in 1924, William Buckley Sr.'s headquarters for the oil interests representing Shell and Rockefeller was in Mexico, and then later in 24, he's off to Venezuela. In 1910, there was a meeting at the Jekyll Islands in Georgia, a secret meeting of bankers, long preceding the Bilderbergers. It was a group of politicians, and they got together and began to put together the Federal Reserve Act, and they got out a publication called the Round Table Quarterly Publication, which began in 1910. As I say, in 1912, there were these German orders, these pre-Nazi groups that were forming in 1912 from the humiliation of Germany being closed in by these other nations and being cut off. Germany was going to be cut off from its exploration, its boats and shippings overseas. And there were two organizations formed, one by George Lanz, L-A-N-Z, George Lanz von Liebenfeld, the Order of the New Templars, and Guido von List, the Armanon. These are the beginning of secret German societies which combined. They were earlier cults, and then they both combined together and started a group that would be interested in, quotes, courageous men, in quotes, to accomplish the work of combating social democrats. By 1912, the revolution had not taken place in Russia, but in 1905 there were labor conflicts and riots and disturbances in the Baku oil fields and around the world, and laborers were beginning to protest and organize, and the social democrats were to be put down by these cults that were better dead than commie, better dead than red, actually. And the defeat of Germany after Kaiser Wilhelm II regime caused so much humiliation that the Germans had secret societies or angry young men, such as we have the Ku Klux Klan in this country and the Minutemen. There were these pockets of organizations that were to merge into Munich and form the Thule Society that Adolf Hitler was a part of. And the Thule Society was anti-Semitic, and they hated the Jews. They identified them with Karl Marx and their earlier doctrines and current doctrines of hating them, and they were looking for what they said was a Führer, and they braced their beliefs going back to Hindu religion and the structure of the society in India of the racial purity and the stratas of society. They emulated themselves after the Indian caste society and formed the Thule Society. In 1913 was the introduction of the Federal Reserve System under Woodrow Wilson that later is to be transferred over to the Treasury. And in 1913, the same year that that was instigated, the Rockefeller Foundation was founded. We had the Rockefeller Medical Institute, and 1913 was the Rockefeller Foundation. In 1914 was the assassination of Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Austria. A Serbian terrorist was the person who sparked off World War I, and then the killing was off and the wars began to be numbered, the major wars. At least 10 million people died during this war, and with post-war famines and epidemics, more than 10 million died, but nobody seemed to learn any lesson from that. The monarchy began to be overthrown in Russia. The Bolsheviks had trouble fighting for the Tsar in this war, and the modern Soviet state was soon to come into existence. It was hard for Russia to fight this war and fight on the home front. In 1915, the Lusitania was sunk. That was sunk by the Germans. It was allowed to be sacrificed by the British and the U.S., and the purpose was to drum up hysteria against the Germans, again, afraid of fear of their expansion programs and taking mines and coal and the industries and then building their German fleets and ships. So the British and the United States allowed this to happen so that there would be anti-German feeling build up when the Lusitania was sunk. President Wilson began to submit some peace proposals to the warring nations in 1916, and that also was the same year that Rasputin, who had a tremendous influence over the Russian royal family, was killed. I can't do a rundown on his life and the politics now, but in another day we'll go into that. In 1917, the Russian Bolshevik Revolution broke out full scale. Mr. Kerensky was overthrown by the Bolsheviks, and Lenin was allowed to return to Russia to become the head of the Soviet Republic. By 1918, there was a total change on the face of Europe. The Volunteer Army of the United States was instigated to begin attacking the Bolsheviks. There's a very good book called The Volunteer Army. The information on this was sent to me by one of the researchers, and it's the story of the Allies entering into South Russia, where all these oil fields are, to control Russia after the revolution. And this is when the United States began putting troops into the Cossack territory to overthrow, even using German and Austrian fronts and Polish fronts to overthrow the government that was put in by the Russian people when they got rid of the Tsar. For a long time, we had Americans and British on the border and even going into Soviet territory to do anything to stop the communists from taking hold once the Tsar was out. You can imagine the terror of the other countries in Germany and England and around the world and in Spain when the relatives of the Tsar were still in power as monarchists and the Tsar and his family were removed from power. It caused a hysteria throughout the world, which has not ended to this day, even to the extent, I say, if they have to kill everyone on planet Earth, it's death to the finish against this very important date. So that we began setting up volunteer armies, and the Solidaris and the Vaslov's Army were the Polish organizations and American and German organizations of Tsarist Russians that were kicked out to avenge this revolution. And then members of these groups were in the Dallas-Fort Worth area with Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald, and that's how I began to study this history, was studying the origins of these people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In 1919, when Woodrow Wilson was getting ready to sign his peace treaty, he was dying of a poison. He had been poisoned, and the Versailles Treaty was blocked. A dozen senators wanted to defeat Woodrow Wilson and get even with him for his Federal Reserve System that he instigated. That was one of the reasons. Henry Cabot Lodge controlled the Foreign Relations Committee, and as I said before, at the time that he was controlling the decisions on the Versailles Treaty and bucking Woodrow Wilson, the dying president at this time. Later, his son is to lose the election in the Senate to John Kennedy and be part of the background of the military assassination teams in 63. In 1919, as soon as the revolution was a fact that the rest of the world had to face with, the Ku Klux Klan was revived in the United States, probably for fear that the blacks would organize in the same way that the Bolsheviks had organized or met in cells. So the terrorism of blacks looking at a white or talking with whites and breaking segregation was still impossible in the South, or in terms of educating them, because as I said before at the beginning of this tape, the dangerous fruit of knowledge is what would overthrow the power structure. And that's why there was such a bitter battle of John Kennedy to educate the blacks in the South during the Civil Rights Movement and bring in the troops. The South has fought the education of the blacks, and the North too. They're equal, but this was really the pus point of it all, and the hangings from the trees and the violence. And there are some good books out on the Klan now, but they revived at the time of the Russian Revolution, just as the Kulak Guards, the hooded ones, began organizing in France to keep the masses from getting together so that they don't have to suffer the same fate of dividing their profits with the masses, or educating the masses, or housing them, or clothing them, or medicating them. And therefore, the hysteria of the Klan was revived. The Thule Society in 1919 in Germany was recruiting Adolf Hitler. And Colonel House, the gentleman that helped against the fight against Woodrow Wilson's goals, who worked with Henry Cabot Lodge, Mr. House studied the internal affairs, international affairs very well, and founded the Royal Institute of International Affairs himself, which became another front or study after World War I on what to do with them. That's one of those institutions like the Thule Society, the Institute of International Affairs. In 1919, when the Klan was organizing its muscles, the broader brand religion got full hold in South Africa. This was a cultural religion made up of Afrikaners and whites, and later in 1930, when we get to that time slot, they became the bulwark of the Nazi secret society, Des Ahnen Urbe, and the broader bands became, after World War I, a tight religious organization opposed to social change, and then later went into apartheid, separating right after the war, like the concentration camps, the blacks from the whites, so that the mobility of education and opportunity became impossible. The broader bands, or the Afrikaners, were white people that lived down in Africa that believed, with their Dutch heritage, that they were as much a part of Africa as the blacks. The church is based upon an intense defense mechanism of a white society like the Thule Society. It is a secret cultural organization that got its muscle after the Russian Revolution. And this is important. These societies wouldn't be so intense if the Russian Revolution hadn't occurred. And the fear that they would be next, the intensity of the hatred and the secrecy of the organizations, I'm sure, wouldn't have been so combined, and a world force was beginning to start in different countries to oppose any possibility of a change such as took place in Russia. You see the Thule Society in Germany, the Afrikaners in South Africa, the Klan in the United States, the major countries are broadening their muscles, and the think tanks in Great Britain and the United States are also giving birth to what is later known as the Trilateral or the Bilderbergers, but it began right after the Russian Revolution, and in the case of the Afrikaners, the universities, the teachers, every teacher in the school is an Afrikaner teacher, every principal was a member of the broader band. And as a matter of fact, the head of the broader band was Gerrit Viljoen, I'll give you his name if it means anything to you, who was president of what they called the Rand Afrikaans University. I think that's an interesting coincidence, if there are coincidences in history, because of the Rand think tank in California that worked so closely with the Pentagon and the attempted control of the world through its various agents and servants to keep a handle on every country in order that it never become like the Soviet Union, where the masses or the people overthrow again the existing social order. In 1920, we move to the next year, February 24th, 1920, was the beginning of the National Socialist Movement with the birth or the creation of Adolf Hitler, this person who was to represent the German interests all over the world. Germans around the world were anxious to rule Germany. They were revolting against the control Austria had had with them. They wanted German self-determination, and they were spreading their German language in Brazil and Africa. And the pro-German movement inside Germany was very strong in 1920 after the war. They just weren't going to take the reparations or the scolding that came down on them. And wherever there's such intense anger or rearming or fighting for something, there usually is a grain of truth. If Russia and France and England were fighting World War I with the excuse of breaking the back of Germany, they certainly survived strong after World War I, and they were going to show these countries, like a big child with a temper tantrum, they hit too many bases at one time, trying to hit off England and the Soviet Union and so forth, but they were certainly going to show them that they were not inferior or second-class citizens, and they probably wanted the right to have navies and boats and take some of those goodies that Great Britain had managed for herself around the world and at least share them, if not take control of them. Now, next week, I'll just escalate a lot of dates and institutions that are important, but without this background, it's hard to appreciate the conflicts that were set. And it's just a fraction of the whole story, but it's just a little bit of background on what, as I say, controls our future.